You can't rely on blind faith to get the pregnancy support you deserve. Ritual's Essential Prenatal Multivitamin is the only leading prenatal backed by its own human clinical trial. Essential Prenatal is proven to deliver key nutrients, including folate, biotin, and vitamin D during pregnancy. Get 25% off when you visit ritual.com/clinical. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Looking to buy your dream home or rent that perfect apartment? With the Redfin app, you'll know the moment your next place hits the market. Set up your gotta-have-it wish list, and Redfin will send you real-time notifications for properties that match. And when you're ready to see it in person, scheduling a tour is just a tap away. Thinking about selling? Redfin can do that too. In fact, Redfin agents close twice as many deals as other agents, so they know how to get the best price for your home. And with a listing fee as low as 1%, Redfin charges half of what others often charge. So you could save big, like really big. Last year, Redfin saved home sellers $118 million. So whether you're buying, renting, or selling, Redfin's ready to help you win. Download the Redfin app and start searching today.
Welcome to The Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome into another episode of The Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross, brought to you by Rotoballer. This is episode 350. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Eric Cross, and with me, as usual, is my 80-grade co-host, Mr. Chris Clegg. Chris, how's it going, bud?
It is going good. Just another day in paradise to talk about baseball, and minor league baseball at that today.
Yeah, no more games for a few months, though. It's kind of sad.
It is sad. I texted a couple of high school coaches around me. I was like, do you have any fall scrimmages? Because I'm realizing I'm not going to see any baseball live until 2025 at this point, which is a sad thing.
Just go gather up a bunch of random people and go play. Hey, go play in the street so I can watch.
Yeah.
Something.
Anything.
Something to get that itch. But, you know, that's mid-November for you. It's November 11th right now as we're recording Monday night. But, hey, spring training, you know, always seems to sneak up on us. So hopefully that's... that gap doesn't take too long this year, but we will do our best to kind of bridge that gap with some baseball talk, some dynasty talk, some prospect talk, as we always do. I mean, our rankings episodes are coming right up around the corner. Another few weeks, we will start those. And we still got a couple fun episodes before then, including today. We're going to go over some overvalued and undervalued prospects right now that, you know, you think you could either, you know, sell for a high price if you got them, you know, that you can buy for a good price if you don't. We got six names on each, so six from each of us, three each overvalued, three each undervalued. But before we get into that, the usual housekeeping. You can find us on Twitter. Chris is at RotoClegg. No, he's not. Chris is at Chris Clegg, MILB. I knew I was going to do that at least once.
Yeah, it'll happen again.
Chris Clegg, MILB. I am at Eric Cross 04. And the show is at Toolshed Pod. If you enjoy the pod, please rate and review. Make sure you check out both of our personal platforms, thedynastydugout.com and toolshedfantasy.com. I feel like we've both done more work over the last like month and a half than, you know, during the season. Dynasty is always a, you know, off season is always a big time for dynasty and prospects. Chris is going through team prospect rankings right now. I'm going through positionally. A lot of great stuff on both platforms, so go ahead and check those out. We greatly appreciate the support. And, of course, Rotoballer is a phenomenal website. So many great, you know, so much great content over there. Written, audio, video, you know, they got the betting. All sports cranking out right there. Still got baseball stuff. So if you want to go over there, check out Rotoballer. Use that code TOOLSHED at checkout. Get you 10% off any premium package over at rotoballer.com. All right, so let's start off with the overvalued. And Chris is starting off with a guy that we just saw a little bit of out in the Arizona Fall League.
Yeah, I've been kind of hitting this one pretty hard for a while, and probably starting out the show with a big shocker if you know me or read my work, and that is I'm finding Tamar Johnson still to be a little overvalued. Tamar's a good ball player, and I'm not arguing that. Tamar was an interesting profile. So he comes into this draft year. He's labeled as like a 70 grade hit tool, one of the best hit tools that we've seen in some time. And that really never translated. It was almost as if Tamar kind of sold out for power, which is fine. Like, I think that, you know, having that power is useful. I find that as a second baseman, there could be some value in him hitting for power. He's a smaller guy. He's a little bit undersized. Strong frame, though. Listed 5'7", 175. He hit 15 home runs this year with 19 doubles. But he hit just .237. .386 slug. Okay, like, it's interesting. Now, the profile gets really interesting to me because it's like, okay, we're now looking at someone that whiffs a lot, but he also doesn't chase a lot. It's really good discipline. It's pretty good pitch recognition. He just whiffs a lot on breaking balls. He can pick them up. Doesn't mean he's going to hit them. I've seen Tamar a ton, dating back to 2023 when he was with Greensboro, and this year with Greensboro and then the AFL again. And it's kind of been a consistent thing. Tamar can hit fastballs. Now, I've seen him hit a 98-mile-an-hour David Sandlin fastball opposite field over the wall. And then I also see him get chewed up with pretty, you know, just average breaking balls, in my opinion. So with Tamar, like, looking at the profile, yeah, I think there's some power there. I mean, he's put up good exit velocities. He's kind of consistently improved that, you know, year over year. But looking at the profile contact-wise, it's certainly well below average. I mean, we're looking at contact rates around like 70%, little under. Contact rate against breaking balls, like 60%. Like, there's a lot of question marks with me still as to can Tamar Johnson hit the level that we hope. You know, in the AFL, I don't put much stock into AFL stats, but honestly, it was a lot of kind of like unengaged like play, in my opinion. Like, maybe it was a long season. I wouldn't fault him at all. I mean, he had 124 games in the regular season and then has to go out to the fall league. I'm sure he's tired. Now he's with Team USA. All that to say, you know, I still see Tamar ranked really highly on some fantasy list. I'm not there. Not a top 100 prospect for me. Even on a real life list, I just don't see the value in him being a top 100 guy. So I don't know. I'm fairly off here. I think a lot of people are still in or kind of hoping, hanging out on the hope. I think this will be a big year. I mean, he's just 20 years old, so it's too soon to like completely write him off. But seeing Tamar in a lot of top 50s and some top 30s, like, I think he's still being overvalued, in my opinion. So that's my first one.
Yeah, no, that's definitely a good one to start out with. And I actually have one from the same org in my undervalue, one of my undervalued picks there, that I like better, and I'm probably on an island or, you know, on a very small island with only a few other people on that one, but we'll get to that person in a little bit. I'm going with a guy that I just wrote up earlier today in my second base prospect rankings here, and that's, you know, he's more so a shortstop. He did play a little bit or a decent amount of second base as well, and that's Cole Young with the Seattle Mariners. And again, like Chris was saying, like, us having these guys as under or overvalued doesn't mean we don't like them at all or think they're going to be bad or anything like that. Just things that, you know, the perceived value is too high, and that's, I think, exactly the case with Cole Young. I mean, let's start with the positives. Cole Young, you know, he's a good contact hitter. You know, he was over 80% contact this year, and he's got a great approach. He had, what was it, 67 strikeouts to 87, no, 67 walks to 87 strikeouts this year. I mean, the hit tool is plus. I mean, that's the positive there. I'm just not sure how much power and how much stolen bases he provides. You know, he's not a fast runner. I mean, he might be around average foot speed. And yeah, he's got 45 combined steals the last 2 years, 22 in 2023 and 23 this past year. But he's also been caught 21 times in those, was that, 66 attempts. So he's sub 70% efficiency, which is not good. So how often does he get the green light? Is he more than like a 12 to 15 steal guy at the highest level? That's a question I have. The power just, you know, he's right now, he looks like a guy that's going to be around 10, 11 home runs. So again, there's still going to be a path to value here with Cole Young. He's probably going to hit you, you know, for a high average, give you a good OBP. But is that coming with like 10, 11 home runs and 13, 14 steals? That's still going to provide value, but you know, for where he's being ranked, again, that's what it always circles back to. Like, I still see Cole Young very, very high, and I just can't do it. Like, I think I had him, what, 17th or 18th in my second base prospect rankings, and I don't have him top 100. I think he's actually closer to 150 than 100 for me right now. So, yeah, I think he's a good prospect to sell if you have him, because that perceived value is still, I think, well within the top 100, maybe not top 50, but I think if you looked at average, his average prospect ranking, it's probably like, you know, 70-ish, and I think that's just too high. And I used to rank him there too, but the more I look into him, the more I kind of dig into the profile, this is, I like it a little bit less every time, and I think he's overvalued. So I will start out with Cole Young. So a couple of middle infielders here, and now we go over to the corner infield for our next two. Who you got, Chris?
All right, bring out the pitchforks for this one. going Lázaro Montes, who everybody is infatuated with. And I get it. I understand the power upside. I mean, there is a massive power ceiling for Lázaro Montes. I think that in 2023 at the complex, he hit a ball 119, if I'm not mistaken. I mean, he's a beast. Big frame, big power. There's no denying that. And on the surface, yeah, things look really good. I mean, we are talking someone that hit 21 home runs this year in 116 games, had 21 doubles, and even put up a near 345 slash line, a 288, 397, 484 slash. I mean, that's pretty darn good when we look at it. But I think that the biggest thing for me that's often neglected is the amount of swing and miss in the zone that Lázaro Montes really has. And so that sticks out as highly concerning. The strikeout rate picked up all year. I mean, he consistently struck out at higher clips. Upon his promotion to high A, 30% strikeout rate. And that's a really hitter-friendly park in Everett. So the numbers tick down in Everett. Again, younger guy, high A, better pitching. I get it. But striking out at the 30% clip is a little bit concerning to me. He started out the year blazing. I mean, it looked like the contact skills had improved. I think that after that first month and a half, Lázaro Montes was running like an 80% overall contact rate. And even myself was beginning to kind of question, like, maybe he actually is like making more contact. Didn't stick, though. Ended the year with a 69% overall contact rate. So you see the drop throughout the year. And the end zone. The end zone scares me a bit, 74%. Hitter this big with this long of levers is not likely to improve those numbers substantially moving up. Maybe he improves them a little bit, but it's not like there's a substantial gap where it's like, okay, he can really improve on this. I'm not expecting that, especially given that we saw the numbers kind of go down as Montes went to high A. And you may look and say, oh, the power's got to be off the charts here. But in actuality, the 90th percentile exit velocity is 104 to 105 range. I think it was like 104.5, if I'm not mistaken. It's good. Like, that's above MLB average. But we're not looking at, like, the elite power profile that, you know, some may think that he has. We know he's capable of getting to high-end exit velocities. We've seen that. We know the raw power is probably 80 grade, but I'm still a little bit further behind where some people are on Montes, because I see him talked about as a top 10, a top 20 guy. I'm not there. He's not a top 50 guy for me, because I just don't think Lázaro Montes makes enough contact. Unfortunately, it's a first base profile I'm fairly confident. I mean, he's played the outfield and he's been fine, but I think it's probably a first base profile. I mean, we've seen the glove kind of, you know, play down a little bit as he moved up to high A. I don't know. I mean, obviously, if he's a corner outfield spot, you can get away with a little more. But at first base, there's a lot of pressure on the bat to perform. So I'll be curious where he ends up there. But at the end of the day, I just think that – I think Lazaro Montes is good. I'm just not a top 10 or top 20 type on him.
Yeah, and with no speed added, you need – you know, for a guy to be ranked like top 25 as a prospect, you need to have that hit tool there. You need to be hitting for average – and power, and yeah, there's that question of how much, you know, average does he provide. You know, I was kind of got me thinking, who do you like long term more, him or Jack Caglione?
That's interesting. Probably Jack. I do have him ranked similar right now. I just think that Jack has the kind of game changing power, like Jack and Montes probably have similar raw, but like the game power. I'd give the edge to Jack. He's not that much older. I think he's 21. Lazaro just turned 20. So, I mean, it's probably like a year and a half gap there. But still, I look at the end zone contact that Jack makes, and it's really good. I think he was around 91% in college. It pretty much translated over to pro ball. And, yeah, while the chase rate is much higher with Jack Caglione than Lazaro Montes, overall, I'll just take my chances with Jack there.
Yeah, that's fair. All right, I am going with a masher as well, and a guy that actually led the minor leagues in home runs this year with 40, and that's Davison De Los Santos, formerly with Arizona, now with the Miami Marlins. He hit 40 home runs, 120 RBI, 137 games, also hit 294. But outside of the power, there's a lot of red flags in this profile. And let's start with the fact that, okay, yeah, he had a phenomenal year. No one is denying that, but look at where he played. So the first 38 games of the year were with AA Amarillo in the Texas League. Amarillo is the most hitter-friendly ballpark in all of AA. Then he went up to AAA Reno for 49 games. Reno is the most hitter-friendly ballpark in all of the minor leagues. Like, these are two extremely hitter-friendly ballparks that I could probably hit a home run in, you know. So you had to, you know, add that little context there. But yeah, I'm not saying, you know, he would have had no home runs, but, you know, he was definitely inflated. And just look at one of my just bonker stats here. In AA, again, it was like, what, 39 games. Chris, guess what De Los Santos' home run to fly ball rate was in AA this year?
I'd guess probably close to 30%.
48.3%.
Yeah, it's nuts.
That means that basically half of his fly balls went out of the ballpark. 30% is unstatable. 50% is unfathomable, and that's where he was, again, 39 games. But then he was still in AAA Reno, it was 29.2%. And when he went over to Jacksonville, 33.3%. Like, huge home run to fly ball ratio. He actually has a higher ground ball rate. Yeah, he's never been below a 45% ground ball rate at any level. And yeah, that was this year. He actually had the lowest ground ball rate of his career this year, but he was still 45% in AA, 49.7% AAA Reno, and then 53.3% in AAA Jacksonville. You look at overall, he ran a 63% contact rate overall, and even the quality of contact, it was good. It was above average, but it was not as good as you'd expect. He's 89-mile-an-hour EV, you know, 38% hard hit rate. I mean, again, solid, but not off the charts. That's not double-plus power or anything like that. It's not like James Wood level. And lastly, the approach is just not good. I mean, the K rate, he kind of kept it in check this year. It wasn't like, you know, Spencer Jones levels or anything like that, but De Los Santos has always been extremely aggressive. I mean, the walk rate for his minor league career is probably, I'm going to guess, 6%. Let me see how close I am with that math here. Yeah, 6.4% walk rate in his minor league career. I mean, he's always in that 5, 6, you know, 6.5% walk rate range. I think he's got to get really exposed by major league pitching once he gets up there with Miami at some point in 2025, probably early. Yeah, he could hit 25, 30 home runs, but I just don't see him hitting more than 220. And he's like a poor man's Jack Caglione, a poor man's, who's the other guy we just talked about? Lazaro Montes, like, he's got the good power, not as good as those guys, and he's got some more issues and questions about how much average he'll hit for. So, and OBP, give me started. The OBP's going to be terrible. He's probably going to be a 270 OBP guy. So there's just not a lot to like here outside of the power, and he got really boosted by where he played this year, and Lady Luck was sitting right by him the entire way. So I see him ranked top 50. I mean, I get it. You look at the surface stats, you'd think so, but there's a lot of red flags here, and he is one of the, I think, the biggest sell highs in all of prospects right now. So, yeah, he is definitely overvalued for me.
Yeah, I mean, certainly in that boat. Never, don't think he's cracked my top 100, if I'm not mistaken. But aside the point, going to my final overvalued before we get some positive notes. And again, not all negative, but I'm going with Xavier Isaac. I believe that he's begun to be overvalued a bit. He's gotten really high on some lists. I remember seeing him top 20 in some places. And again, I like Isaac. I can say a lot of positive things about Xavier Isaac. From when I saw him out of the draft in 2023, when he was with Charleston, I mean, the body now is just so incredibly different. I mean, he was kind of a pudgier first baseman that kind of people wondered about the athleticism when he was drafted. He's transformed the body. He's a great athlete. He does a lot of things well. Obviously, the power is undeniable. I've seen a couple of 112, 114 EVs, a couple of big home runs that he's hit, and some live looks that I've had of him. He actually runs pretty well for his size, but at the end of the day, got to make contact, and the contact rates have consistently kind of gone in the wrong direction. And we've seen the strikeout rate blossom to a concerning level. Now, I will say the biggest question mark for me with Xavier Isaac is that we know he had a wrist injury this year. The splits are pretty drastic before and after. It's like, okay, this is weird. But even post-injury, he's still hitting some mammoth home runs. I mean, he put up several 115 EVs after the wrist injury. And even in the AFL, I think he's had one up to 116, which is just ridiculous power. But if you look at the like before and after numbers this year, it's like, okay, well, it's pretty clear that he was hurt, right? I mean, because you look and up through June the 13th, he's hitting 310. Looks pretty good. 395 OBP, 579 slug. Okay, but he's still striking out 28% of the time. Yes, he had 12 home runs and 15 doubles in those 54 games. That's great, but the strikeouts were still an issue. Comes back. I think he was still dealing with some stuff for some points of the year, but again, still putting up some big EVs. But the rest of the way, it was a 40% strikeout rate, 212 average, and a 708 OPS. So my thing is, like, the power's still there. So, like, I don't know. I'm really struggling. Like, is he still hurt? Is the timing just a hair off? I don't know. But the contact rate was a pretty dismal 60%. Like, that's a very, 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 very bad range. And the end zone rate dipped below 70% this year as well. Also, a major concern for me. He made it work. I mean, he put up a 113 WRC plus after the injury despite striking out 40% of the time. But that's got to improve. In the AFL, the strikeout rate was still a major issue. I mean, I think Isaac does a lot of things well. But at this point, I'd almost rather take Josue Briseño. Seeing them both, I hadn't seen Briseño prior to the AFL. But stacking them up, yeah, I may take Josue Briseño over him. And at the first base position, there's a lot of pressure here for Isaac to make at least enough contact to get to his power. And I'm kind of questioning if he's going to at this point. So, yeah, I still like him. He's a top 75 prospect for me, but I think he's much, much higher value. You can get a little bit more in a return for him.
Yeah, just look at the two you just compared there with Briseño and Isaac. I bet you most have them at least 50 spots apart, maybe even more than that. So, yeah, Isaac, he's so tough to rank because, like, you see the upside, but the downside, it's like both of them are very prevalent. Yes, he's definitely a tough one right now to value. Same with this guy. My last overvalued, I'm going Kevin Alcantara with the Chicago Cubs. Again, I don't think he's bad. You know, I think he's actually, you know, going to be a decent player, but I just see him ranked really, really highly, and I still have some questions before I can go, like, that highly with him. I mean, he's a good athlete. He's got good power, but he's limited by a higher ground ball rate, which has been generally in the, you know, low 50% range. I mean, this year he was right around 51, 52%. Last year, 50%. 2022 was actually his best year for ground ball rate. It was down to 43%. And again, before that, back up and around 50% years before that. So generally in that 50% range. So that really limits the power. I mean, he's shown, like, the quality of contact that he's shown is good. You know, Contreras got last year 91 mile an hour average EV, 48% hard hit rate, but only a 5.5% barrel rate, shows he's hitting the ball on the ground too much, and the overall contact was below 70%. I mean, he's a good athlete, not running a ton. He's been fairly efficient on the base pass. It's not like he's been caught a ton, but he's only attempted 67 steals in 400 games. So, like, is that going to be a big part of his game? Is he going to be like a 10 steal guy as opposed to the 20 plus that we kind of thought he was going to be when he was, you know, a younger prospect coming up through the Yankees and the Cubs orgs a few years ago? I don't know. I mean, I still think he's going to be a good player, but I have questions, and I think he's getting ranked too highly. I mean, he hasn't put it all together, and I could, you know, end up eating my words, and he finally does put it together. He starts elevating more. He starts running more. That's obviously a possible outcome here with Kevin Alcantara, but, you know, I still have a lot of questions. I think he's overvalued right now, so I will go with him as my last overvalued, but let's switch it over, Chris. Do some positives here, and, you know, just this proves that we're not totally against the Seattle system. I actually like the Seattle system quite a bit, but we have the two overvalued guys from Seattle. But let's get an undervalued guy here with your first guy.
Yeah, this guy I've kind of been pounding the table on for a while, and it's Johnny Farmello. It's interesting. I've actually never seen a prospect move up in rankings all season without playing. I mean, Farmello got hurt early in the year. Obviously, a pretty drastic injury. I mean, torn ACL in June put him out, I mean, for the year. Going to return at some point in 2025. Might be midseason. We'll see. And on the surface, like, Farmello's season was good. I mean, he had 221 plate appearances in single A, and Farmello slashed 264, 398, 421. He had just four home runs, 18 bags, 10 doubles, 3 triples. Johnny Farmello, though, I think was on a trajectory to be a top 10 prospect, for me at least, if he had not gotten hurt. I mean, we're talking about game-changing speed to begin with. I mean, there's no denying that. So that kind of sets the foundation of his entire profile. He is a speedster. 18 bags, caught twice. He probably would have stole 60 bases, if I had to guess. That kind of player. He's a good glove, but that's not even what I'm going to hit home about. When I look at Johnny Farmello, it's like, okay, I think this is evolving into a 5-category type player here. His power numbers were pretty respectable. Again, this was somebody first year out of the draft. He was 19 years old. He's got a pretty good frame at 6'2", 205. So you look at the profile, and okay. He had a 9th percentile EV right at a little above 102. Okay, yeah, that'll play. I mean, 19-year-old, expect that to probably rise a little bit, especially just given his frame. And the contact skills are spectacular. We're looking at a 79% overall contact rate. The end zone contact was north of 90%. Love to see that. And he doesn't chase. He ran a chase rate right around 20%. The data on Johnny Farmello was trending towards him becoming a five-category player, in my opinion. And, yeah, I mean, you look at the surface and it's like, okay, yeah, I mean, it was good, but not great. But I think that given if he had played and given the time, like, this dude was on a rocket ship, and I don't think many people had realized that yet. And honestly, I hadn't until I looked at his data in early June before he got injured, and I was like, whoa, like, this dude has it. I mean, he has every tool you want to see, in my opinion. Power's like really the kind of only question mark. Here's the question I poise. Everybody loves a Max Clark profile. I mean, you look at the data and it's kind of very similar. Farmello might be a better runner than Clark. Clark is obviously doing his bat speed training this offseason, driveline. He may add some pop, but yeah, you know, I don't think there was too many dissimilarities in Clark's kind of value as a top 10 guy. I just see Farmello getting there. Still think he's highly undervalued. Probably would grab him this offseason. I'm going to try to grab him everywhere I can. I think that he was probably going to be the Mariners' top prospect. Like, that's the kind of trajectory he was on. So, and that's a talented system, too.
Yeah, no, it definitely is. I mean, look at all the guys we've already talked about in this system. I mean, this is still a loaded system, and you could probably trade a Cole Young for a Farmello right now. I bet you think Cole Young's ranking is higher than Farmello on average, probably.
Yeah, I mean, probably so, if I had to guess. I think, in general, people, the out-of-sight, out-of-mind thing affects people, and that was kind of the case with Farmello, so he didn't play half the year. Probably so.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely wouldn't be, you know, still higher if you'd played all year. But, yeah, I think you could probably trade a Cole Young from Farmello right now and see their rankings go in completely opposite directions this year. My first one, I'm going to stick out in the AL West as well and go with Colby Thomas. I mean, Thomas is an extra base hit machine. I think he led the minor leagues in extra base hits by a considerable margin this past year. I mean, ton of doubles, had 30 home runs as well, and he's knocking right on the door to Sacramento, West Sacramento, wherever the heck they're going to be next few years. But yeah, 44 doubles, 5 triples, 31 home runs, so that's 80 extra base hits in 132 games. Also had 15 steals, went 18-25 the year before that. He's a, you know, efficient base runner, 80% success rate for his minor league career. You know, doesn't walk a ton, so I don't think he's going to be a high OBP guy. I'm probably not even a super high average guy. I mean, Thomas's contact rates are, I mean, they're 66, 67, 68% in that range. So it's not great. He's going to have a good ballpark to hit in next year in Sacramento, so that should definitely help. So I think he's probably like a 250 type of guy, you know, 320 or so OBP, but I think he's a 25 homer bat. I mean, I don't think he's going to be like 30 plus like he was this past year in the minors, but he, you know, he's an above average power bat, you know, solid runner as well. So, you know, maybe a 20, you know, low to mid 20s home runs, you know, mid teens steal, maybe, you know, mid to upper teens steals guy. So when you kind of put it all together, you know, I think he's going to be a pretty well rounded offensive player. And I mean, I have him right around on top 50 prospect right now. I don't think that's consensus. I think he's probably more, you know, back end top 100, maybe even out of it for certain people. And yeah, that's why I feel like he's undervalued right now. And a lot of Oakland prospects in general, I think, do get undervalued. And I get why. You know, it's been, you know, they've missed on a lot more than they've hit. You know, the Austin Becks of the world, the Lazaro Armenteroses of the world, a couple names from a handful of years ago. But and this is, the system is getting better. Thomas has consistently performed well throughout his minor league career. And again, you know, it's not a profile that really stands out and wows you, but he's major league ready. He's going to play in 2025. And I think he's going to be, again, a guy that can give you good power speed and an average that won't kill you. So I definitely like Thomas a lot, and I think he's very much undervalued right now. All right, we got four more names here. Chris is going to the America League Central.
All right, I'm going to go with Kevin McGonigal, and this was certainly someone that I was probably guilty of underrating as well at one point.
Yep, same here.
He's a smaller frame, which that always gets me a little bit when there's a player that is smaller than me, short guy. It's like, okay, the Jose Altuves are the rare exceptions in the league. And so there's a big threshold when you're on the smaller side to make the majors. But Kevin McGonigal did a lot of things well this year, and a lot of things that you look at and say, okay, like maybe he is kind of pushing past some of this, you know, ideology that a smaller frame guy might not work. He was a former comp round in 2023, 37th overall, big bonus. Unfortunately, he had a hamate injury, had surgery in August, kind of damper into his season after he had dominated single A and then went to high A. He had a great year overall. I know the numbers in high A don't look great, but he hit a home run in high A that left the bat at 112 miles an hour. That obviously stands out in a big way for a smaller guy to put up a 112 at 19 years old. Pretty wild. He hit for the year combined 309, had a 401 OBP and a 452 slug. We're talking about somebody that struck out at an 8.5% clip and walked in 14% of plate appearances. Sure, he hit just five home runs all year in 74 games, but 16 doubles and four triples as well. McGonigal does a lot well. Not the speediest of guys, but certainly an efficient base stealer. Stole 22 bases on 24 attempts this year. You love to see that. And the contact skills are just out of this world good. I mean, we are looking at someone that posted a zone contact rate north of 90%. That obviously stands out in a big way. And the overall was actually pretty close to 90%. His zone contact was near 93% on the year, which is nutty. And then the overall around 87-88%. Low chase rates, some big high-end power. We were actually talking about somebody that had a higher ninth percentile exit velocity than Walker Jenkins, who's a top 10 prospect. So McGonigal just does a lot well. I think he's still pretty undervalued. I think that you could call him a top 15 prospect, and I probably wouldn't be too upset about it. I think that, you know, if he comes back from the hamate injury looking good, then yeah, I'm pretty in there.
Yeah, like I wrote up in my second base prospects article that he might be the best pure hitter from that 2023 draft class. You could make a strong case for that given the contact and given the approach. Just looking at that specifically, yeah, phenomenal player there with Kevin McGonigal. I am going to go with a guy that I used to be critical of, but you know, as I watched him, you know, I saw him a lot here. You know, as he was here for up in my neck of the woods for the better part of a year and a half or so, and that's Nick York, you know, formerly of the Red Sox, now with the Pittsburgh Pirates. Got a little cup of coffee with the Pirates at the end of the year at 11 games there, but you know, he's just slowly impressed me more and more. And yeah, the profile, it still doesn't wow you. I don't think he's going to be a high-impact player. But this is a guy I was hinting at earlier that I like more than Tamar Johnson long-term. Does he have the same upside as Tamar Johnson? No. Is he, you know, much safer with a higher floor? Absolutely. And I don't think the upside is even that far off. I mean, you look at what Nick York, the better Nick of the two. I think Nick York's better than Gonzalez as well. But yeah, Nick York, look what he did this season. It was a pretty good year. Kind of flew under the radar to some degree because he's not like the super big prospect name. But slash 303, 385, 449 in 123 games between Boston and Pittsburgh system. 33 doubles, 12 home runs, 21 steals. Now, he's always been, you know, a pretty solid approach guy. Doesn't strike out too much. Walk rate, you know, is generally in that 10-11% range. And you know, look at what he did in AAA this year. It was pretty damn good. Look at, you know, his blend, what he was doing for contact and power. He was around 80%, just a hair below 80% contact rate. Average EV was 91 miles an hour. He had a 50% hard hit rate. I mean, you know, higher ground ball rate limited his, you know, overall power there. And he only had, two home runs in 40 games with AAA Indianapolis, but also hit .355 with a .431 OBP. I think York is, I've seen enough of York. Like I said, I've seen York live probably, I'd venture to guess 25 times if I'm putting a ballpark on it. I feel comfortable enough to say that I think he's like a 15-ish homer guy. You know, again, not going to blow you away, but he's probably also around a 15 steal guy. So if he's in that 15 range, while giving you, you know, probably a 270, 275 average, solid OBP. Again, none of these numbers I'm saying stand out, but when you kind of add them all together, that could be a sneaky good little fantasy asset and a guy that's going to play a good chunk of the year with Pittsburgh and probably all of the year as long as he hits well open the season. So not flashy, but I think Nick York's kind of been written off. I mean, I almost did myself. I mean, rewind 2 years ago, 2022, that was when he was more so down in Chris's neck of the woods. He had a really bad year, and I think that was the year that kind of turned a lot of people off. But he was better in 2023 here in Double A Portland, and much better this past year in Triple A. So, and then Double A a little bit as well. So again, not a standout, but kind of solid across the board, and the guy can give you a little bit of everything. So, especially if he's going to be playing second base, that position is really bad right now. So he could kind of sneak his way into that middle infield territory and provide sneaky value. So yeah, I think Nick York is undervalued right now, and I was guilty of it myself, but not anymore. All right, we got one more guy each. Chris, who are you closing out with?
Another guy that I was too low on entering 2024, despite knowing the upside that he brought to the table, and that was Pablo Guerrero. And I wanted to get at least like one sleeper in here, or like a deeper type guy. And Guerrero's that guy for me now, where he did some pretty incredible things this year. You know, coming off a DSL season where I had some concerns about him in 2023. Again, he was very young. He was 16, and this year he spent the year as a 17-year-old at the complex and even in single A to end out the year. But Guerrero made some pretty major strides, and I think it's pretty notable what he did. You know, you're looking at it, and at the complex, he played 51 games. He had 7 home runs. Cooley put up a good slash line, 301, 367, 522. I think slash lines kind of go out the window a bit with complex ball. But again, he was extremely young hitter at 17. He even bumped up to single A and held his own for 107 plate appearances. Slash line doesn't really look the best there, but again, we are looking at a sample where, you know, there was some bad BABIP luck, I'd say, and he actually struck out way less than you'd probably anticipate. But Pablo Guerrero, the underlying is pretty good on him. Looking at this kind of player, it's like, okay, obviously, younger brother of Vlad Guerrero, you're going to expect him to have big power, and that's exactly what he does. I mean, a near around 106 mile an hour, ninth percentile for a 17-year-old, that's like top of the scale for somebody that age. That's big time power. He barrels up the ball extremely well. I mean, at least in the complex sample, it was a healthy percentage of balls in the air. And even in the pull side, he excels in pulling the ball over 50% pull rate this year. The ground ball rate at the complex was 38%. Slightly went up in single A, but not a ton. So that's obviously a bit of an encouragement for me, too. The end zone contact of 80%, like, that'll play. I mean, I mentioned Lazaro Montes earlier as someone that's being overvalued, in my opinion. I mean, he was down, 74%. So pretty big gap in end zone contact. Pablo's overall contact rate's a little lower than you'd like at 67%. But again, there's a little bit of chase. And when he's chasing, he's not consistently making contact. But anyway, aside the point, Guerrero making it to single A as a 17-year-old, putting up the kind of power metrics that he is, I think stands out in a big way. This year, he's going to go probably back to single A. He may get a stint in high A. I'd bet he's in high A by midseason. Wouldn't shock me at all. And, you know, I should get some looks at him now this year. They now have two affiliates close to me. Obviously, the new Spartan Burgers team will be their high A. Hickory will be single A, but I'll get some looks at both. So I'll see some Pablo Guerrero this year. But yeah, I just think that he's someone that I was pretty low on early in 2024. And even when he was striking out a little bit too much early in the complex season, yeah, I mean, to see kind of the progression here, I wouldn't be shocked if this is somebody that pushes up to top 100 status soon, because the power is undeniable and some of the underlying looks really, really good with Pablo Guerrero.
Yeah, that is a good name right there. Following in his family's footsteps, you know, all those Guerreros love to hit for power there. I'm going to end with an older guy, which I think factors in to why he's undervalued, and I'm going Shea Whitcomb. I mean, Whitcomb is now 26. He turned 26 very, very late in the season and in late September. Got a quick cup of coffee with Houston and did nothing with it. You know, hit 220 in 20 games, 46 plate appearances. But I think there's a lot to like here, especially given where his perceived value is. I mean, he's always been an above-average power speed guy, and he's shown that. Every year, he's putting up the big numbers. I mean, 23 home runs, 30 steals back in 2021 in just 99 games. And then he went 19-20 in 118 games in 2022. That was in Double A. In 2023, Double and Triple A, went 35-20 in 133 games. And then this past year, Triple A, 25-26 in 108 games. I think I calculated it out. If you go to, I think it was 150 games, the last 4 years, he's averaging like 35 home runs and 33 steals or something like that. So that power speed limit has been there, and he, you know, he's an above average runner, and he's got above average quality of contact. Like, that's, that part of his game is legit. But what's really kind of impressed me with him, he was always a guy that didn't walk a lot. I mean, walk rates were below 8% for the most part, you know, a couple years ago, and even last year, you know, struck out a lot. But did wonders with, you know, his approach, dropping the strikeout rate, increasing the walk rate in 2024. I mean, Whitcomb went from having a 7.1% walk rate and a 30.2% strikeout rate in 2023 to 11% and 19.8% respectively in 2024. I mean, those are notable, tangible improvements that you can really, you know, feel good about. And at the same time, you know, he hit for a higher average. The contact skills went up. They're still not great. He's like low 70s contact, but that's, you know, that's passable. And he's a guy that could play all over the infield. He's played second, third, short, even a little first, little corner outfield. I mean, last year he played, you know, six games at first, 17 starts at second, 31 at third, 10 in left, 1 in right, 29 at short. You know, he plays all over the field. And there's an opening. I mean, assuming Alex Bregman doesn't come back, I mean, he always could, but let's say he leaves town, I think you see Whitcomb take over that third base spot, and I think he could provide some sneaky value. I mean, he's older. He hit 24. I think that, you know, 24 is that magic number for prospects where it's like, all right, that guy's old now. They become a little less interesting, but there's still a fantasy-friendly profile here. There were some tangible improvements made by Whitcomb in 2024, and I think he's going to be, you know, a sneaky good value going forward and a good dynasty target right now, because that perceived value, I think, is still pretty low, you know, given the age and, you know, previous batting averages that he had, you know, coming into 2024. But that is going to wrap us up. Those were 12 pretty fun prospects to talk about, and we got a lot more good episodes coming up. Again, our rankings episodes are starting in a few weeks. We got some more buy sells coming up. We're going to do an industry mock draft coming up here pretty soon. A lot of fun stuff. But until then, we will catch you next time. We'll be right back.
breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply. Available in app only.
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths, and sometimes heights, to ensure the power is always flowing. Which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.